nonprofit on Fridays that we bring in, and we have a guest, don't we, John?
Yes, it's wonderful.
Yes, we have a guest. And so here we go, and I'll let you take it away, John.
Hey, Shane, thank you. Look, folks, we have an exciting day lined up today. We have Mr. Dion McGinnis. He's with Empowered Creativity, but he's got a really interesting history about dealing with nonprofit situations, and he's quite the expert at dealing with nonprofit situations, actually. So, Dion, I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself and how this expertise came into being.
Well, thank you, John. My story, I was born at an early age. Oh, you don't want me to start there? Okay. In 1987, I got into higher education as a writer and a photographer, and within just a few months, I was involved with alumni relations, fundraising, communications, all those things that in the university world we call university advancement. And so for 27 years, I worked with universities, four different universities, to raise funds and engage members and so forth. But then I also worked with nonprofits, helping them out, chambers of commerce, art alliances, and things like that. In April of 2014, I left the higher ed world. I thought I was going to be there 3 years, and I lasted 27. So I left that world to go out and try and help the nonprofits and help them raise more money and be more efficient, be more effective, and help donors as well, to help them have a more joyful experience and a better thought-out experience when they decide to whom to give money.
Now, our audience usually is small businesses, okay? Mm-hmm. And we've done several different types of radio shows that involve what small businesses need. And we believe there's a need for small businesses to involve themselves in nonprofit situations. You were with large donors, large endowments, and things like that. Most of our small businesses will never be.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the differences in those two. Are there any differences? Are there different ways to look at situations?
That's a really good question. Some of the universities, of course, are dealing with huge funds, but anybody who's philanthropically minded can learn from those sorts of processes. So, for example, a business owner, especially nowadays, I'm going to suggest that they probably need all their capital right now. Right. They need all their cash. Well, they can still start thinking ahead about what they want to do when they sell their business, or if they or one of the partners pass. So there's a lot of ways to start thinking about what to do with their philanthropic ideas. But there's also things like community foundations. And a community foundation is a way that somebody can put money into an organization, the foundation, and then it'll disperse the funds in what's called donor-advised funds. So it still allows the business person who tends to be involved in decision making to still be involved in the decision making, because okay, it's donor advised funds.
Okay.
And I think that, real quick story, years ago there was a consultant at a professional development conference, and he said that the new money is with entrepreneurs, the business folks. And he said that entrepreneurs are interesting people, but they have too many interests. And I called him out on it at the conference. I said, what do you mean, but? It's and. You know, entrepreneurs are creative, they're spirited, they're energetic, they love to know things. And the more a nonprofit can connect to that spirit of an entrepreneur, engage their brain, engage their talents, teach them things,
right,
the more it's a full-on engagement, the better match. So I would encourage business people, through their volunteer efforts, through their service on boards, to be able to learn what causes are about and what organizations serve those causes.
Okay.
And that'll help them make better decisions as to who they want to give their funds to.
Okay. So, you know, you actually, you and I had a conversation about 2 weeks ago, and I told you what we were doing with the show, and it piqued your interest, it looked like.
Oh, indeed.
So you have given us something to talk about for all of our three segments today. Because my question to you was, if you're a business owner and you want to be philanthropic on a small scale, large scale, or whatever, you know, I mean, you might be watching TV and you might say, you know what, I think I will put some money into this cause. But there's always this nagging doubt in our mind, you know.
Right.
Is the money that I give to this going to be spent for this organization? Or do we just have a few fat cats down there pulling off a lot of profit of marketing a heartbreak,
right,
to us? And now most people these days are really astute about what they do with their money. But there are those real masters of the con world out there that can separate us from our monies very easily. So you gave me an idea for each of these three segments. And the first thing that you want to do is you want to talk to some of these nonprofits that you are considering, or you want to evaluate them some way about what their values are. And so I'm going to turn that back to you and just let you build that as large as you want to build that one.
Okay,
because that's where it starts.
It really does. I mean, not to oversimplify, but it really does start with the shared values. And, you know, there's a lot of, I think a reaction for a lot of people is they want to give to something that they're familiar with, okay? Mm-hmm. Dad dies of cancer, so they want to give to a cancer-based organization. Mom right. had breast cancer, wife had breast cancer, they want to look at the Komen Foundation or something. And so there's always a connection that way. But I think part of that is really based on the sense of values.
Mm-hmm.
What is one's personal values? If a business person has truly grabbed themselves by their bootstraps and have worked incredibly hard to build a business and you know was very frugal and very conservative with their funds and had to make a lot of tough decisions, it probably wouldn't be a good idea for them to start putting their money in an organization that doesn't think in a similar way.
Right.
Because the donor's going to start to resent the fact that they busted their chops to make the money, and now this other organization is spending it like water. One of the misperceptions or misconceptions that we hear about a lot is the role of administrative overhead. And actually, we're going to talk about that in one of the other sections. But you can't look at a nonprofit only by the amount of money that goes into administrative overhead. You know, like there's some sort of formula. In fact, I was at a presentation this morning. Houston Business Journal had a great morning breakfast about nonprofits in the Houston area.
Right.
And Anna Babin from United Way had said that they operate under the decree that there will be no more than 12% administrative. Well, that works for some, but there's also other ways of analyzing it. But the values of how you spend the money, but also values of the purpose of the cause. Some donors are going to be more inclined to want to give to a faith-based organization
right.
because of those type of values. Mm-hmm. Some may be values as it relates to their appreciation of the environment. Well, there's also different ways of looking at the environment. Okay, you can look at a stand of trees, and if you're poetic and think of Joyce Kilmer's poem, you know,
right.
trees,
right.
you'll look at trees and have a certain set of values related to that, versus somebody who's fourth generation timber farmer in the Piney Woods in Texas, whose family has built a lot of houses out of those trees.
Right.
So aligning the values and what's important to you is really important. And one of the ways to do that is, and we'll talk about some resources at the end of the show, but you know, it's really to get to know the organization,
mm-hmm.
and you're really not going to get to know them by just looking at the website or just picking up the phone.
Right.
Okay.
And that was some of the things I do want to pick your brain about later.
Yeah.
Is because, you know, if you have a set of values that you've defined, you should have, you know.
Right.
You have a set of values, whether you've really written them out and looked at them or not, you have a set of values. So how do you know that organization, in other words, is going to align with what your values are?
I think one of the most important things that you can do is volunteer in even a small way.
Okay.
If you just said, look, I can spend 2 hours a week at the gift shop of the local whatever organization and see what that's about. How do people treat each other? How does the organization treat its clients? How is it perceived by the community? You know, I'm a big believer in volunteerism anyway, but I really think that it has a huge effect in making philanthropic choices. In fact, probably, 15, 20 years ago, I went to a conference by the Women's Philanthropic Institute, and they said it's particularly critical for women. They want the communication, so what happens at home happens in the other world. They want communication. Tell us how you're using the money. Tell us what your organization is doing. Well, they found that now that the younger generation wants engagement before they make decisions with their treasure. So they'll give time to values, okay, before they start relinquishing their own personal treasure to a cause.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so if you're really interested in an organization, you don't have to become a board member. Okay, just do a little bit of service.
Okay.
Volunteer or even just walk in sometime without anything that makes you look like a donor. don't drive up in the Rolls Royce, you know. You know, the more you get to know them in a genuine fashion, the better you'll understand how they live out their values.
Right.
And that's going to have implications to how they spend their money, too.
Okay. So you can gain that much insight about the organization just spending time there.
If you're paying attention, okay. Right. This is one of the cool things about volunteerism is you start to put your time in it, and you end up getting so focused on your work as a volunteer that you may forget to start
right.
absorbing the other information.
Right.
We'll go back to the gift shop example.
Okay.
Down in Galveston, for example, Lighthouse Christian Ministries has a gift shop there, and there's everybody has a gift shop. I shouldn't isolate any one organization. A lot of nonprofits have their gift shops. Well, it's amazing what happens when you walk in, though, and see how the employees, who some are employees, some are volunteers, how they interact with each other. Do they have respect for each other? Do they have respect for the people who come in as customers? If you pay attention to that and start processing that or putting that in your memory and say, this is the way they live out their mission, this is the way they live out their service, that'll help you really understand the values that they have and whether those are values that are listed in a mission statement or whether they're values that are actually lived out every day.
Right.
And for that to happen, it probably comes from the leadership on down.
Right.
Now, that tells you something.
Certainly.
So, you know, all these things really add up to help you make better decisions.
Okay. One of the things that you wanted to talk about in this segment, you wanted to talk about personal decisions regarding philanthropy. Expand on that for me.
Okay. That's, on the scale of things, very few, you know, it's a small percentage of people who are philanthropic, particularly when they look at when you look at their estates. I heard an estate attorney the other day that said, less than 5% of people leave a charity in their nonprofit. And so I think most people want to do well for others. They want to help out some way or another. But that's different, you know, giving $5 here, $20 here, or, you know, $50 when the plate passes at church. Is different than starting to make philanthropic decisions. And so I think when you start making personal decisions about who to give to, it should be a joyful experience.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's a term, the joyful donor.
Mm-hmm.
And donors should be pleased and feel good about what they've done. And the way to do that is to best align your personal values before you start making decisions. There is a reaction, for example, for people just to give to their alma mater, to the university from which they graduated. Well, okay, that may work. That may be a motivation for some. But if a university is only getting 4 or 5% participation, that means 95% of the people are choosing other things to give their money to.
Right.
And it might be their church, or it might be Cancer Society because Mama had cancer. Or there's so many ways that people can help. Okay. That I think it's really important for when you start making your personal decisions to really pause, especially if you're starting to talk about significant money.
Right.
And by significant, I mean whatever it means to you. Okay. $1 million to somebody really wealthy doesn't mean that much, but $100 to somebody who's not making much at all is significant.
Right.
So really pause and think. Think about who you are, what matters to you. Think about the timing. You know, there are some, that's why the holiday season, so many people give, you
mm-hmm.
know, or
right.
or the food drives are so successful right before Thanksgiving, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, you may want to start making some decisions based on your own budget and the things that you know are going to come up during the year.
Okay, super. You know, you bring to this table that factor of the larger donors, you know, but it sounds like the principles that you're talking about works.
Absolutely.
For everyone.
Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, I was at a presentation the other day where a woman from a homeless organization that helps homeless people in this community, she said, if you can't give anything else, get somebody a pair of socks.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's huge. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anybody can go to and buy a few extra pair of socks or a case of water or something and give that to a homeless person. And she said, if a homeless person turns down socks, they're not really homeless.
They're not really homeless.
She said, because they all need socks. So there's a lot of different ways, and this process of really thinking about your own values can
drive
all
those
decisions.
That goes right back to aligning the values with that one person.
To
see if those values are there. How long did it take you to develop this philosophy that you have about?
I think it really came very early in the process.
Okay.
Because even when I first started my career in higher education, I felt like I was doing it for the other people more than I was doing it for the university. So it really is for those who are giving of themselves.
Right.
You know, university is private money, research money, tax money. You know, they're going to be getting money, okay? But the people who give the money away are giving out of their blood, sweat, and tears from their labors.
Right.
And I've always had a high level of respect for that. Mm-hmm. And the more I saw and the more stories I heard from those who were giving money away, again, these are stories of a life well lived or a life with its own challenges.
Right.
And despite that, or because of that, they've decided to give funds away. So I've always had a high level of respect for that.
Do you have an opinion on do most people want to be philanthropic, or do just a few people want to? Who are the givers, who are not
that's
the givers?
That's a great question. And if there was a really clear answer, nonprofits would hire you like crazy. You know, they say, you know, in the whole phone book of people, you know, let me know who I'm supposed to talk to. But different people are motivated at different times. I think we're all inspired to want to do something.
Right.
That doesn't mean we're all capable of doing it.
Certainly, certainly.
And so, you know, for example, you know, John down the street may want to do something, but he can't, and then all of a sudden he inherits something from his grandmother's passing, and now he can.
Right.
So it's important for a nonprofit to always be visible, okay, because you never know when somebody's going to have an event in their life that either makes them able to do something or inspires them because of out of a personal experience. Or, you know, people tend to give money to causes because they want to provide an opportunity to others, like for good health care or a summer camp or music, or they want to help others not have an experience they've had.
Right.
Pain, homelessness, hunger.
Right.
And so I think it's innate for people to want to do something. I think a lot of people aren't sure how to do it in terms of donations, and it's largely because of how you started this whole conversation. Those things you see on TV that tug at your heartstring in a way that make you feel like you're getting played.
Right.
And you just feel like you got to wash your hands. And people are skeptical.
So, well, you know, and I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and visit just a little bit more on that before we start
Okay.
a second topic. But, hey, Shane, I'm going to turn it back to you to do our ID for us.
Yeah, well, I did want to throw in one more thing before
Uh-oh.
We go to break.
Okay.
Because something that I work with, because and especially because that's what Thrivers is focused on, is focused on the entrepreneur. And so often, and that's from my experience, what I'm usually working for is the entrepreneur. They're starting out, they're building a new business. And one of the things where, especially the serial entrepreneurs that are my absolute favorite customers that come back time and time again, but once they get to that point and they become philanthropic and they reach that, one of the things that we've learned to do, I've taught them to do, I said, look, you're going to come in, you're going to set up a corporation, you're going to have investors, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. Guess what? You don't necessarily have to write a big check. Let's go down to whatever your favorite organization is, all the things you talked about of figuring who that out that is, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden give them 5% of your company, of the stock in your company. Now, you're a startup company, it's not hardly worth anything, and it's not doing, but you give them that 5%, they now have that hook, and they're actually earning whenever you come in and profit. So rather than me coming in and saying, well, I own 20% of my company, and you know, it made, you know, $1 million this year, so I got $200,000 off of it. Well, guess what? I already gave out that 5%. And so that person's automatically gonna be, you know, given. And that's something people can do early on. I don't have any money, but I can Right. give away that stock.
That's one of the sophisticated strategies. I'm glad to hear that. 5% is actually HEB's model too. 5% of pre-tax earnings, and so. But that's one of those creative, sophisticated ways. If somebody wants to make it, there's the three main things.
Hello, Galveston. We are back with the Thrive Live radio show. We have gotten reconnected to the servers, back to the mothership. Welcome. This is our Nonprofit Friday, coming to you from South Shore Harbor, overlooking the marina. And you are listening to us on the Radio Free Galveston, GLVI. And anyways, and today we are talking with Dion, and he's talking to us about how we evaluate and look at nonprofits from a donator, a donation standpoint.
And I was going to tell us to go right back to something we were talking about, but after your comments about how to do this as a young business, I got all enthralled about what you were saying and totally forgot what I was going to send you back to, Dion.
That's what happens when you put old people on the radio.
Oh, my gracious. I feel the love and the respect.
It's 2-on-1 here, buddy. We'll get you.
I'm including myself in that. What are you talking about?
Okay. Grab my walker over here. I'll ring him with you. All right. So we've been talking about how to align our values with a nonprofit and to be sure that that is really the organization that we want to participate with. What's some good ideas? Go volunteer a little time with that company.
Makes a big difference.
Get the heartbeat of it. See what's going on in there. Are they really real?
Okay. Well, I mean, I've tried to do that for people who have asked me about organizations. You know, when they're trying to make a decision about a major gift, they don't know, the organization doesn't know me from Sam Hill. I can get in there and start digging around just as a John Q. Public,
right,
and get a sense of what they really stand for, and then
right,
report that back to the donor.
I think you enjoy that.
I do. I do.
Okay. Before we go any further, I would like to talk about what you do at Empowered Creativity. Okay.
Well, I appreciate it.
I want to hear a little bit about this. What a wonderful office here. I'd never get work done looking at all the boats.
Yeah, I do have to keep my desk turned away so I'm not looking out the 40 feet of windows. But Empowered Creativity is really, speaking of values, I believe that we were created in the image of a creator, and it is our responsibility to create with our knowledge, our experience, our wisdom. And we create solutions, and we create good recipes, and we create, you know, there's so many things that we can create with on a daily basis. And so my goal is to help nonprofits and individuals to see how to come up with creative solutions.
Right.
How to be more effective with what they have in terms of personal resources, personal abilities. Take what they have and make the most with it. Mm-hmm. Every Monday morning I have a session called Make It Happen Monday. It's for nonprofit leaders and fundraisers and board members and volunteers. And each week we go over a different topic about something of those areas, and we go over it, and then we talk about how to use it. So when they leave every Monday morning, they've got information that makes them better at what they do. Nonprofits need all the help they can get. They are critical to our community, and if that's one way that I can help make it happen, then I'm happy to do it.
You know, my history, and I don't know if you're aware of it, but I am a retired firefighter, and I was the emergency management coordinator in my city. And it was quite interesting when I went through the one hurricane, the list of priorities at that time of bringing systems back online in your community after a disaster. And obviously, you tried not to ever let your hospitals go offline.
Right, sure.
But one of the first things that came back on, you would think would be banks or grocery stores, but it was the faith-based organizations. Because they had not only the heart to serve, the resources to serve with, and they were the ones most of the time that were our first setups for food distribution and water distribution.
That's good to hear.
And so, you know, there's power to the nonprofit organizations in ways that we never think about.
Yeah.
And I hope we never lose sight of the fact of what these nonprofits
can do
for us. You know, that's the reason for this particular radio show is we believe that the nonprofits need to be put into a spotlight in a real light. You know, a 30-second TV commercial doesn't tell you anything.
Right.
A radio blurb doesn't tell anyone anything. And in reality, a website only tells people what you want them to
hear. Right, absolutely.
You know? Absolutely. And so, you know, I'm thankful for this privilege of putting nonprofits out there in a way that really shows what they do. We've had some real fun shows about nonprofits.
Right. Well, I applaud y'all's work for that. It's critical.
So this has been good. One of the next things we want to talk about is, you said, purpose.
Right.
So let's jump off into that, and it's your turn.
Okay, we'll go in the deep end immediately then. Look at purpose a couple of different ways, keeping in mind that these are three steps in evaluating what to do with your funds. One of the things that you really want to ask yourself, if not ask the organization, is what is the purpose of the organization and the purpose of the funds? For example, one of the nonprofits that comes to the Monday sessions that I just referenced, you know, she works with women who are going through transitions in life, that she wants to give them a hand up instead of a handout.
Right.
Okay. Well, there's some organizations that are more about giving the handout and some that are going to be more about giving a hand up. Well, okay, that's different purposes. And you want, as a donor with limited resources, which defines 99.9% of us, you know, you want to make sure that you're aligning with the purpose of the funds, right? Well, if you start getting a little more sophisticated with your giving, maybe it's a larger gift, or maybe you're talking about something with your estate, or you had a windfall, you know, from mother or grandmother or something, and you don't feel like you need the money and you want to give it to someone else, then you really want to start looking even more deeply about the purpose. A nonprofit, a university, you know, anything like that is going to really be interested in having discretionary funds. But you may not want to give it to that. That's basically right. this big pool of funds from which the leadership can take.
Right.
If you have a very strong confidence in how those funds are going to be spent for their purpose, go for it. But you can also look for different elements, different programs. In fact, I mentioned the breakfast this morning, and one of the topics they talked about was that corporations more and more, because the budgets are tight, are looking at what is the specific purpose of these funds. Not just the purpose of the organization, but are we supporting a clowning project at the hospital? Are we supporting a literacy project through photography? What is the specific purpose of the funds? And so when you think about your contribution, you're thinking of the purpose of the organization and the purpose of the wallet which within those funds are going to be placed.
Right.
Is it a program? Is it discretionary? Is it, you know, there were a few years ago when the stock market was struggling, to put it mildly, if a donor even suggested putting money into an endowment, I would say, maybe not, okay? Because that purpose, though noble, that was not the time to do it.
Right.
Because they'd give us a dollar today and it'd be worth 60 cents tomorrow or something. So be very clear about purpose.
Okay. Now, are there ways to stipulate what you're going to do with your funds in that organization?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact...
Tell us a story about
there's,
that.
There are some limits, right? If you're going to give $3 to an organization, you can't say that you want to make sure it's used for postage.
Right.
But the further along you get, the larger the gift, you can put some stipulations on the funds. In fact, the IRS forbids you from having too direct of an input on the gift. Okay? Otherwise, it's no longer a gift. Excuse me. So let's say, for example, let's say you wanted to give money to an organization for scholarships. You couldn't say, here's my $5,000 for scholarships, and it needs to go to somebody with the last name Sheffield, whose father's name is John, who lives at this, you know. The more you stipulate it, it no longer becomes a gift, and the IRS won't allow that to happen.
Okay.
Likewise, there's some things that the federal government and or the state government and or the organization won't allow. So for example, we'll use scholarships because a lot of people think of scholarships. You can't be too defined in who the scholarship will go to. I think the current status now, certainly for the state of Texas, is you can't say that it's a scholarship for a certain ethnicity or a certain gender. You can describe a zip code or a high school that they graduated from. So there are some stipulations, and there are some that you can and cannot.
But those stipulations don't allow any bias of any kind.
Right. And you can just define in terms of geography, or there's other ways to define. Like if you're a graduate of a small town high school, you may want to support students
right there.
Again, though, one of the most important things is that communication. You know, most nonprofits will have a variety of things that you can give to,
right.
Support the food bank, support the outreach program or sport. They're offering up ways for the donor to make a more defined decision as to where they want to put their money.
Okay.
So there are some limitations, but you can even better align, you know, your money with the purpose for which it's going to be used.
Would this, you know, I mean, a while ago we talked about values, aligning your values.
Right.
If you see an organization that's much more organized.
We're off.
It'll be every Friday at whatever time.
You throw out a new podcast.
Okay, Galveston, we are back on Reconnected. Sorry, we keep getting disconnected. Not sure exactly what's going on. But in any case, and so here we are. Again, this is Thrive Live Radio Show. We are here with Dion and talking about evaluating nonprofit organizations. And I think that's what we were talking about just right before we went off, was the ability to look at nonprofit organizations, even though they are, as we've talked about it before on the show, they don't pay taxes on the funds that they receive. And if they are qualified as a public charity or even a foundation at different levels, whenever somebody makes that contribution, they get a tax deduction on that. Consequently, even though they don't have to pay taxes on the funds received and people get contributions, that reporting is required. And so every year, and that's what you were referring to, is right. The 990. So even a nonprofit organization will come in every year and basically will fill out the equivalent of a tax return. If it was a business, it would be a tax return. And in that, they're going to disclose a certain amount of information. Now, part of that also depends upon the, depends on the size of the organization. If it's an organization that receives less than $50,000 in funds a year, they do a 990 EC, and basically the reporting is, here's who our directors are, and we receive less than $50,000. Thank you, and you move on. So you don't know how they spent the $50,000. You know, and then as you get up as larger organizations, you get more transparency as to what they're spending it on. But then a lot of times it's very generic. Even within that reporting, it's not necessarily who did we give the scholarship to or whatever, just how much scholarships we gave out.
Well, and that's part of the reason why trust is so important. I think of some of the nonprofits that come to my Monday sessions. Some of them have fundraising goals of $1 million a year, and some have 50,000. And so there is a wide range, and when they're just getting started and they're under that 50,000 threshold, it might encourage some people to be more suspicious. Generally speaking, I think it's just a matter of doing four are really a good way for you to start doing some behind the scenes homework without showing up on a nonprofit's radar screen where they start bugging you.
Right. Let's talk about these websites again. Donor Houston, tell me about that one.
Donor Houston was created, if I got my numbers right, it's probably been about 12 to 15 years ago, and it was at the impetus of several organizations. I think the Community Foundation of Houston was behind it. They were the primary driver. The Houston Endowment was one of the big funders of it, and there are several others, some corporations, and I'm sorry, I can't remember their names at this point. It's been a few years, but their idea was to provide a resource where people could look up information about organizations so they can make better donor decisions. Well, GuideStar is a national database of organizations.
Okay, Donor Houston, is it just city of Houston?
Donor Houston is Houston County? Region.
Region.
Houston okay. Region, thank you for okay. that. And they've actually now connected to GuideStar.
Okay.
So when Donor Houston was first created, it was primarily for the members of the Houston Community Foundation.
Okay.
They have now aligned their data with the GuideStar. So they feed information back and forth, basically, which is a huge benefit to nonprofits that are in the database. And okay. to get in the database requires a lot of work and effort. What's your mission? What are your goals? What are your financials? What are your 990s? So just getting to that stage so that you can be that transparent says a lot about a nonprofit.
Okay. Okay. So they're kind of stringent on what they even.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And then you mentioned Charity Navigator as well.
Charity Navigator is similar to GuideStar, but it's got some differences in terms of the type of reports that are available. You can subscribe to those services for free, but it's you can get into the 990s, look at who's on the board. See generally what their overall assets are, how much they spend out each year. It's some of the main areas that they like to fund. Things that they use their funds for.
Right.
So Charity Navigator also includes some financial reports that help you understand how the nonprofit is spending its money.
Okay.
The one thing about Charity Navigator to keep in mind is that there are a lot of nonprofits that will not be evaluated by Charity Navigator for a couple of reasons. There's a long-standing nonprofit in our community down here, north part of the county, that is not rated by Charity Navigator because most of their money comes from grants for services delivered.
Okay.
You know, for abuse or drug abuse or whatever. So it's grant money to do service in the community versus gift money. Those are very different.
Right.
And for Charity Navigator, too high of a percentage of grant money kicks them out of the formula for being evaluated.
Right.
So.
And by the way, that's not a bad thing.
No, not at all. Not at all.
You know, when as an emergency management coordinator, I was able to write for federal grant monies for our little region and around Missouri City with City Sugar Land and emergency management coordinator named Pat. Oh, they're a great guy. And then, you know, we worked with City of Stafford as well, real hard, with Jennifer, who was the emergency management coordinator. And they, we put together the things that were specific that grant would fund.
Absolutely.
And that's the only way we would have ever gotten the funding for things that we did. So, you know, if you have a nonprofit out there that's getting grant money plus gift money, that's still a good thing.
Oh, absolutely. So, I would hate to suggest that grant money was a bad thing.
Right. But, you know, some people may hesitate unless they really see, you know, their specific purpose for grant money. Usually grant money is not just money just to go spend.
Oh,
it's usually designated what you can do with that. You know, and in the municipal side, the government side.
That's everywhere, John. It's watched very carefully.
Okay.
There are, you know, unfortunately, those stories of nonprofits that didn't spend the money exactly like the grant required.
Right.
And quite frankly, it's easier for an agency to go get grant money back from a nonprofit than it is for a donor to get gift money back from a nonprofit.
Okay.
Because the whole idea of the gift is that you're releasing, you know, your possession of it, whereas grant money is there's expectations. There's a quid pro quo. The agency gives money for something to be done.
Right.
And there's that expectation it will be done in a timely manner.
Right.
So, and really the strong nonprofits have a combination of funds. There's, you know, one of the things we talk about in our Monday sessions is how to look at the 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 revenue streams that a nonprofit can utilize and how to balance those out with ebbs and flows so that you end up with income throughout the year.
Right. Okay. Okay. We haven't even touched on the third area here that you wanted to talk about with us today, and that's performance. And you've got three separate different categories of that. So let's jump off into that.
Okay.
Because we've had such issues, we only have about 12 minutes left.
Okay. Well, we've actually covered some of it in that last section. We talked about what you do with the funds and, you know, how well you perform with those funds. You know, one of the worst things that can happen is for somebody to give money to a cause and then the cause doesn't spend it.
Right.
Because you could have given the money to somebody who would spend it.
Right.
And that might even include your grandchildren. I mean, so, you know, it's incumbent on a nonprofit to be very clear about what performance they're going to have with that money. But there's a couple of ways I encourage donors to think about performance, and that is one is the performance of the funds, right? And so, If a donor is giving money into an endowment, maybe they don't have the money to create their own endowment.
Right.
And just for clarification, an endowment is a pool of funds that are invested.
Okay.
That pool of funds cannot be spent. Okay.
Okay.
For those funds to be spent, it has to be what's called a quasi-endowment. But an endowment means the money is put aside, it cannot be spent, and the interest earned off the endowment is what is used by the organization for the intended purposes of the gift. Okay. Well, I think it's incumbent on the donors to learn a little bit more about what is the performance of the endowment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they investing it by putting it in a mayonnaise jar between the mattress?
Right.
You know, sometimes that's probably the better thing to do. or is it in highly risky funds? And it doesn't matter whether it's a small nonprofit or a huge university. If monies are going into endowments, it's a fair question to ask and say,
right,
what's the performance? I think the other performance you want to look at is the performance of the organization, and that is how effective is it with its money. Okay, is it using? Again, you don't want to get too caught up on this notion of what the administrative fees are, but I'd say if the administrative fees are 20% or more, you probably want to start asking some questions. And sometimes there's reasons for it. I had a...
Yeah, you labeled this the facts and fallacies about overhead.
Well, and you know, it's... In fact, I had a local financial planner who sent me a Charity Navigator kind of a summary of a nonprofit. He said, my client was thinking of going to this nonprofit, but I'm suggesting that they don't. What do you think? And well, there was just enough information there to form an opinion, but not necessarily have the truth. And right. So, it requires more homework. So, if looking at this one example, it looked at how much they were spending, okay, to raise every dollar. How much was spent on fundraising versus how much in gift money came
right.
in.
Right.
Okay, not overall money, but gift money. Well, there could be some reasons for that.
Right.
You know, if the nonprofit was only a few years old and was just now beginning to hire a fundraiser, well, the money for fundraising, the investment is high, but the person hasn't been able to get their feet underneath them for fundraising that year. They're learning the culture, they're building trust with donors. You know, there's reasons, okay? And so I think information that you see in some of these websites or when you look at 990s, or it gives you questions to ask. It doesn't give you the whole story.
Right.
Okay, so sometimes you look at the administrative fee and it's so outlandish that you kind of, you know, maybe you don't want to walk away. But don't read too much into it.
Okay.
There's nothing like learning about the organization and pouring over the numbers yourself.
And I was going to add in, because it could very well be, I've worked with some organizations where this was the issue. It was simply a matter of, it was actually a very well-run organization, okay? And they were doing all the good with what their funds were, but they didn't necessarily understand whenever they did their reporting and their requirements and stuff. So they would turn around, they had a facility that they had to pay rent on
right.
and all of this. And they came in and they had all these counselors that were in there. They were paying all of this stuff. They put all of that under administration. And so every year they might turn in and they might do, you know, give out some scholarships or specific
right.
funds or whatever. And they came in. What happened is they put, so it looked like they had 80% administration.
Mislabeled. Yeah.
But the reality is, in some other organization or some other business, yeah, that might be administrative expenses. But the reality is all of those funds were really going to provide the services to pay
right.
for the counselors to do all of this stuff. And
yeah.
so it may simply be that. If you got a part of the organization, you knew where the funds were going
right.
and it made sense.
And that's why it's so important for a nonprofit to have the right kind of staff and volunteers on the board. You know, and one of the other areas of performance is of the administration of the funds. And I get back to this notion again of funds that aren't spent. And every nonprofit, and especially every university, I don't know a single university or community college that doesn't have gift money that's sitting there.
Wow.
Okay. And it's unfortunate, but it happens. And so I'm not saying it's a terrible thing, but there is a point at which it really has to be resolved.
Right.
And I'll give you a story. It was from a university that's not in this area. But it's in the state, but not in this area. And the university, when I first got there, I was looking at the endowments. Remember, endowments are funds that are
right.
set aside,
right.
and then the interest is spent. And I found this endowment, the agreement was on mimeograph paper. It was created in the 1940s. And in the 1940s, this woman gave $10,000 to the university for scholarships, okay? Now, this is back when $10,000 was worth
$10,000. Yes.
And I found out that the scholarship had never been awarded, okay? The $10,000 endowment had $15,000 in interest earned, which means it was very low return for,
right.
you know, 50 years. Well, I've tried to reach out to find the donor, okay, to say, I'm sorry, you know, I just got here, I found this, we're gonna return most of the money to the corpus, and then we'll make an award so you can meet a beneficiary, a student. Well, I couldn't find the woman, and about 2 months later, I got a letter from an attorney that said she had passed away. Well, we got a copy of a couple of the pages of her will. Our university got $250 worth of books, okay? Other universities got six figures. And I think it was her way of saying, you ignored me for 60 years.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So here's what you get.
Yeah.
You know? You get
yeah.
some of my books. And so it's incumbent, you know, things fall through the crack, but a nonprofit has to be diligent that when gifts come in, they're spent. If it's a gift for if people are giving to something that's bigger, like a building or something, yeah, it's going to take a few years. The money is going to sit there for a while.
Right.
But be transparent and communicate. Let them know how far we are on the goal. But performance is huge.
This leads back to what you talked about. You have such respect for the donor themselves. You know, there's an emotional involvement in this.
Absolutely, there is.
And you have to address that. That's an unfortunate situation. We've got a few minutes left. I just want to be sure. Oh, I want to ask you this. You used the term 20%. Is that just a kind of a...
It's a loosey-goosey rule of thumb. Okay. I mean, I think if you're at 20% or more in administrative, you probably want to raise an eyebrow and just ask questions. Like I said, it doesn't say that there's something wrong. It just suggests that you want to ask questions.
Okay.
You know, it may be a bad application of, you know, putting it in the wrong category. But, you know, you want to at least ask questions. One of my clients actually is a nonprofit that has 7% over it.
Wow.
She is lean and mean.
Oh, she is.
Okay.
Yes.
And donors like that.
Yes.
Okay. But, you know, she's got the vision, and she's got the ability to operate her shop that way.
Right. Right. We got about 4 minutes. We talked about resources earlier on those websites. Did you have other resources that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I think those are the main ones in terms of trying to find out information about an organization. I do have a blog called philanthropyliaison.com, and in those postings you'll see stories of some of the issues that donors face.
Okay.
It's hard to give away money.
Okay.
There's a wonderful quote by Aristotle on that site. I'm not going to give it away by reciting it here. You have to go to the website to find it. But it's a wonderful quote by Aristotle, and what he's basically saying, even back in those days, he and I used to hang out together. Even back in those days, it was clear that to give money away is easy. To know who to give it to, for what purpose, and when is very difficult. And through 27 years of fundraising for universities, plus what I've done for other organizations, I've heard time and time again the story of people who said, this is the hardest thing I ever did.
Right.
You know, we had a donor at the University of New Mexico, wonderful guy. We created a great proposal to honor him, his wife, and their relationship through different gifts. And he told me before I left that institution that it was the hardest thing he did because he let some family members know about
right.
that gift.
Right.
And then they started nagging him, saying, how come you don't give to my cause?
Right.
Giving money away is hard.
Right. Yeah. I want you to give us your contact information, how people can get in touch with you.
Great. Thank you. My phone number is 832-877-8821. My website is dionmcinnis.com, dionmcinnis.com. And my email is dion@dionmcinnis.com. First name at firstnamelastname.com.
Okay. We're going to let you have just a couple of last-minute things here. I just want to announce that next week we're going to have the Galveston Food Bank people on, and going to be visiting with them. Shane, they actually have told us to come down and look at their facility before we start the radio show so we get an idea of who they are and what they do.
I believe this is words of wisdom
we've heard from Dion today.
Absolutely.
Last words from you, Dion.
It's a special thing to give money away. It's a special thing to give time, talent, or treasure. You are right to want to do it in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Ask questions, learn more, become involved, you know, get to really understand the organization, and thank you for what you do for the world by giving some of yourself away.
Thank you for being with us today. This is a show we've wanted to have for a while, and I did not realize that you were, as you know, I've known you now for a couple of years, and I did not realize that this was your field of specialty to this degree. And I believe that same financial planner and I had a conversation about this. And
right.
So he's the one that headed me your direction for this show.
Well, I appreciate
today.
The opportunity.
And he's one of these people that has a very giving heart. We
mm-hmm.
both know that. And so it was great for us to be able to bring you on today. It's been a very good show. Thank you very much.
I appreciate
much for
the opportunity to be here.
And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I do believe that Dion will be back on this show before too long. So thank you for joining us for the Thrive Live radio show. Again, we are trying to get here every Friday afternoon. Sorry, I thought we got thrown off there. Every Friday afternoon, we do our Thrive Live radio show about nonprofits, and that's what we were doing today. Join us again next Friday. Again, we're going to be with the food bank, and so we will talk to you all guys then. So thank you for joining us.